Blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now sparks shoot out of a radio transmitter atop the revolving Earth. An RKO radio picture. Now in a black and white film, credits appear in front of a two-story house. RKO Radio Productions Incorporated presents Cary Grant as Dick, Myrna Loy as Margaret, and Shirley Temple as Susan. Miss Temple's services by arrangement with David O. Selznick, The Bachelor and the Bobby Soxer. Copyright 1947, RKO Radio Pictures Incorporated, all rights reserved. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Justin Soule and Dutch Priest. Read by Nathan Carlson. For more about DVS, call 1-800-333-1203 or visit our website at dvs.wgbh.org. With Rudy Valli, Ray Collins, Harry Davenport, Johnny Sands, Don Badeau, Lillian Randolph. Original story and screenplay by Sidney Sheldon. Directors of Photography, Robert Degrassi, ASC, and Nicholas Musaraka, ASC. Music by Lee Harline, Adore Sherry Production, directed by Irving Reese. Now we move past a white picket fence toward the house. Inside, a heavy-set black maid sets a cup and saucer on a dining room table, then heads up a staircase to a closed door. The maid enters the dark room. Passing a canopied bed, she walks to a window and pulls up the shade. Bright sunlight streams across the bed, showing the girl's sleeping form. She crosses the room and goes to another set of windows, then pulls up two more window shades. She steps over to the sunlit bed.
Miss Susan? Miss Susan?
The maid picks up a bell from the nightstand next to the sleeping teenager. Susan rolls over. Dimples appear at the corners of her mouth as she smiles, nudging her cheek against her pillow.
Just 5 more minutes, Bessie.
No, ma'am, now.
Bessie, I feel absolutely squonklish.
Well, you just squonklish yourself down to breakfast. I'm getting the judge up right now.
I'm up.
Squonklish. When I went to school, they taught us to speak English.
Bessie heads down the hallway past the staircase to another closed door.
Judge Turner?
Bessie enters another dark bedroom, tastefully furnished with a polished wood dresser and four-post bed. She walks to a window and pulls up the shade. As sunlight floods in, Bessie steps to the bed and leans over a figure bundled beneath the sheets.
Judge Turner? Judge Turner?
Bessie pushes an open book off the edge of the bed. A pair of arms stretches out over the sheets. Then Judge Turner rolls over on the pillow, revealing her delicate face, thin eyebrows, and dark, curly hair.
5 more minutes.
Breakfast is ready, Your Honor.
Bessie turns to a nearby chair and picks up a robe, then sets it on the bed.
What time is it?
It's a few minutes past 8.
As Bessie sets the toppled book on a table, the judge sits up.
Is my sister up?
Yes, Miss Margaret. She was feeling a little squonklish this morning, but I got her up.
Next time she tells you she feels squonklish, you tell her not to be a clunk.
Thanks, Your Honor.
I dig you.
Later, Susan enters the dining room in a sweater and skirt.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, dear.
Susan answers the phone.
Hello?
Hi, Jerry. No, we have to listen to a speech this afternoon. Good deal, Neil.
Susan, your breakfast is on the table.
Hang on a second.
Susan sets down the receiver and heads into the dining room.
Sorry I'm late, sis.
Did you sleep well?
Oh, squonklish.
Don't be a clunk, Miss Susan.
Susan lifts her eyebrows at Bessie.
You've been coaching her.
Someone has to protect her.
Margaret, you know the case you were trying? The old man who ran away with a 16-year-old girl?
Yes.
What did you give him?
3 years.
That'll cost me $3. I always bet that you won't sentence people.
That's ridiculous. How have you been doing?
You've cost me a fortune.
If you're interested in a more exact science, you might spend some time on geometry.
I don't consider geometry a part of life.
Mr. Roberts does. He says you're the first student he's ever had who defined a triangle as two women crazy about one man.
Mr. Roberts is definitely decadent.
Is he?
Margaret.
How much?
Only $3, just as an advance on my allowance.
You're already working on 1949.
Margaret picks up her purse.
But no more betting.
Thank you very much. I often wonder why you're so good to me.
You know I'd die for you, only sometimes it's very hard living with you.
The call of the wild. I've got to go.
You haven't eaten your breakfast.
Thanks. Bye.
Susan grabs a wad of bills from her sister's hand, runs to the foyer, and picks up the phone receiver.
I can't talk now.
She hangs up, then checks her hair in a mirror. Back in the dining room.
Bessie.
Yes, ma'am?
Have you been following the case I just finished about the man who ran away with the young girl?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
As a matter of curiosity, do you think my sentence was too severe?
Oh, no, ma'am. I would have given him 10 years.
Would you?
I certainly would.
Thank you, Bessie. I was just curious.
Oh, that must be the judges.
Oh, yes, I'll just keep them waiting.
As Margaret starts to head off, Bessie hands her a hat.
Oh, thank you.
Your Honor?
She holds out a portfolio.
Goodbye, Bessie.
Goodbye, Miss Margaret.
Now Margaret enters an office where a gray-haired man waits. She buttons up a judge's robe.
Exit woman, enter judge. More's the pity.
Uncle Matt, I take exception to your innuendo. I'm no problem to you. You should concern yourself with Susan.
Oh, nothing wrong with Susan that the firm hand of a man in the house wouldn't cure. I've been telling you that for years. If you'd listened to me then, you wouldn't have this problem.
And I've been telling you I will not put up with your constant attempts to get me married. Come in.
A man with a package.
Good morning, good morning. Good morning, Margaret. Good morning, Herr Doctor.
Good morning, Chamberlain.
Margaret, I have a present for you. I found a copy of the rare old English writ of Exegi Fasius.
Thank you, Tommy.
Oh, if that's the night-blooming Exegi Fasius, you can put it in a vase and water it.
You seem a little truculent this morning. Physician, heal thyself.
See you later, Margaret.
Matt heads to the door, then turns.
Oh, just for the record, I'm not as much interested in the woman getting married as I am in making sure that she marries the right man.
As Matt leaves, Tommy turns to Margaret.
You know, I don't think he likes me. It's a sort of sixth sense one acquires in the district attorney's office.
Oh, no, Tommy. Uncle Matt has a personal life beyond his job as court psychiatrist, and occasionally the two become a little confused.
Yes, I guess so. Speaking of work being combined with pleasure, Margaret, I understand you're going to review a case this morning involving one Richard Nugent. I have a special interest in this
Tommy,
case.
You know I don't like that. And if your gift is in the nature of a bribe...
Oh, put it out of your head. I'm sorry you even brought it up. But this man has given us a great deal of difficulty.
You'd better go where you were going, and I'll go where I was going. So long, Tommy.
Very well. But remember, absit in video.
Tommy leaves as a bailiff enters through another door.
We're ready, Your Honor.
All right, Mac.
Margaret heads out. Now inside a courtroom.
Raise your right hand. You do solemnly swear the evidence you'll give in this matter of the state versus Richard Nugent shall be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to help your God.
Okay.
Yes.
Step up to the bench.
Margaret looks up from behind the bench and scans the line of witnesses before her. A sandy-haired woman, a bald man with a bandaged hand, a dark-haired woman with a bandage across her cheek, and a tall man with a bandaged chin.
Go ahead, officer.
We picked up Richard Nugent in the Vampire Club, Your Honor, on a radio riot call. When we got there, there was a free-for-all. And from what we could learn, Nugent was at the bottom of all the trouble.
Which of you is Nugent?
Mr. Nugent isn't here, Your Honor. I'm representing him.
Is he in the hospital?
No, Your Honor. He's out on bail.
Does he know that the hearing was for 9 o'clock this morning?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. I'm sure he'll be here. He must have been unavoidably detained somewhere.
If Mr. Nugent isn't here within the next few minutes, I shall issue a bench warrant and forfeit his bail.
But, Your Honor,
I'll hear the evidence of the complaining witnesses. May I have your name?
The tall man.
My name is Anthony Herman. I work at the Vampire Club.
In what capacity?
To maintain law and order. I throw people out that raise a disturbance in any shape or form.
What happened last night?
Well, I just got back from the front of the house where I had to maintain law and order on a gentleman that told the orchestra leader our music stunk. Returned to my usual post, I became aware of loud activities and screams. As I rushed over to maintain law and order, a straight left catches me. As you can see, a short time later, I'm informed that the disturbance is over. But there's one thing I can remember, Your Honor. Mr. Nugent was the center of the disturbance.
But you didn't actually see him fighting.
Oh, he was fighting all right. If I ever get my hands on it,
the bald man wags his bandaged finger.
Quiet.
Your name?
The first woman.
Miss Agnes Prescott.
Go on.
I'm also employed at the Vampire Club as an entertainer.
Huh.
A modern singer of modern songs. I've known Mr. Nugent for some time. I once posed for him. In costume.
I posed for Mr. Nugent, too. In costume.
Shall I continue, Your Honor?
By all means.
Last night, Mr. Nugent happened to drop in to renew our acquaintance. And while we were having a few words at his table, we were accosted by this here lady, which I resented. Harsh words were exchanged, and Mr. Nugent came to my defense.
That's a lie. I knew him first. You're the one who was butting
in. Don't you call my liar. Please, everybody's listening.
Just a moment. Your client, Mr. Nugent, has exactly 60 seconds.
Pardon me. May I say, Your Honor, that Mr. Nugent's lack of punctuality comes as no surprise to the district attorney's office.
Indeed.
Mr. Chamberlain has a special interest in this case. You see, this is the third occasion on which this man, Nugent, has been involved in a public disturbance.
I object, Your Honor, to the remarks of the district attorney. They are intended to prejudice the court. I think the facts in this particular case should be considered, nothing else.
Your Honor, I feel that it's important for us to consider the various...
It's important that I consider only the evidence presented in this matter.
Very well, Your Honor.
Don't sulk about it.
A tall, dark-haired man and a woman push past seated spectators at the rear of the courtroom.
I'll move over, lady.
An elderly woman moves down the row to give the pair two adjoining seats. Margaret watches as the woman sits and the man turns toward the bench, wearing a stoic gaze.
Good morning.
He pushes back through the row and approaches the mustached defense attorney.
Good morning, Wallace.
Morning.
He then faces the row of witnesses.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
The dark-haired man turns to Margaret.
May I assume that this is Mr. Nugent, the defendant?
I'm frankly and honestly delighted, Your Honor.
Is it all right for us to go ahead now?
Oh, I'm sorry, but...
I hope we haven't inconvenienced you.
Oh, no. It was just that...
I know. Your watch is slow.
Stopped. Yeah? Forgot the winder.
I don't know whether or not you work on schedule, Mr. Nugent, but this court does. 9 o'clock means 9 o'clock.
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
Now, let's get on with this. Did you go to the Vampire Club last night?
Yes. Uh-huh. I'm doing a series of paintings on Americana, and I'm including a nightclub scene.
Creating a nightclub scene would seem more appropriate. However, there seems to be some doubt as to how the fight actually started.
Well,
He turns to the sandy-haired woman.
Agnes had finished her spot. That's a theatrical term, means her routine, her performance.
Thank you.
Dick flashes her a smile.
Well, we were having a drink when Florence...
He points to the dark-haired woman.
Whitman.
Appeared. She, on a couple of occasions, Florence has posed for me.
I merely stopped by Mr. Nugent's table to say hello, Your Honor, and this cut-rate canary apparently resented my appearance. Well, my escort...
I prefer to hear Mr. Nugent's version.
Thank you.
He flashes another smile.
Florence's escort appeared. I suppose you met him, too. He objected to Florence coming to my table. Florence insisted on not being disturbed. One thing led to another. Tony slapped Florence, and I slapped Tony.
He was only defending American womanhood, Your Honor.
Get that.
Florence attempted to stop the fight. Agnes scratched Florence. Florence...
He looks toward Margaret, then shakes his head.
Anyone who says he remembers a fight punch for punch is lying. I don't remember.
Your Honor, Mr. Nugent has been in a couple of escapades before, but believe me, never through any fault of his own. The fact that he is an artist and a painter of contemporary American life often places him in circumstances that may appear unusual. Mm-hmm.
There's no reason why this court should give Mr. Nugent special privileges just because he's an artist.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting that, Your Honor.
Your Honor, the district attorney's office would like this man held over for trial.
On the basis of the evidence, I see no reason for it. It's obviously a fight in which everyone participated. Everyone is equally guilty and everyone is equally innocent. I suggest that you all go home and nurse your wounds and be a little less emotional in the future.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I go now?
You just got here. Don't you like our court?
Oh, sure, I like it fine, only I'm due to give a lecture today.
Really? What are you lecturing on?
America, as I see it.
It should be very interesting. Yeah. Mr. Nugent... I've met your type before. In fact, I might say, I sentence them every day in the week. If you're brought before this court again, you won't be dealt with so leniently. In future, I suggest that you confine your painting to still life. Case dismissed. Next case.
Don't press your luck.
Walters leads Dick away. Now, an open-top jalopy with the word Sunset Hill on the side stops next to a high school campus. Inside the building, Susan walks beside a boy with a floppy pompadour hairdo.
I wish we didn't have to have this thing today. I hate lectures.
They pass several groups of students on their way to an open door. The boy sets his arm against the door and leans in over Susan.
Is it okay for Saturday night, Susie? You promised.
promises are the hollow shells of undone deeds.
Well, for gosh sakes, what's that supposed to mean?
You're a nice boy, Jerry, but you're callow.
Not too callow to buy you sodas or take you to a movie when your allowance runs out.
Don't create a scene.
Only reason I'm not good enough for you is because you're looking for a knight in shining armor. I'm competing with something medieval.
Oh, don't be a stoop.
Jerry and Susan head through the door to an auditorium. Later, a man addresses students from a podium.
Students, members of the faculty, our high school is honored in having as guest lecturer a man who will speak to us about the classical tradition of painting. He's well qualified to speak to us about painting because, in my opinion, he is one of America's foremost exponents of painting.
He flashes a perplexed look, then shrugs.
Students, I know you will express your enthusiasm for his appearance here today. And so, with no more ado, I present Mr. Richard Nugent.
Dick rises from a row of faculty seated on stage. As the handsome artist steps to the podium, the girls in the audience scoot forward in their seats. A smile creeps over Susan's face as she begins to applaud with the others. Next to her, Jerry slumps with his eyes to the ground. Dick stops and stares out at the assembly of students, then glances back at the faculty. He moves forward, beaming at the reception. Dick steps out from behind the podium, taking the microphone stand. Susan sits up in her chair, applauding vigorously. Jerry looks up briefly and closes his eyes. Later.
And as we know, a lot of people think of art as something pretty stuffy. Don't let them kid you. True art has something to say to everyone. Great art unites the masses in every age, in every country.
He's handsome.
I suppose so. An older man.
As Susan beams, Jerry stares off.
If you think art isn't functional, look at it in terms of history. Each age, each era, becomes visual to us when the artist recreates it in stone, bronze, or on canvas. The essence of art is simplicity. For instance, if I wanted to capture the feeling of America, it wouldn't be necessary...
While Susan watches, a brilliant light shines down on Dick from above as he reaches out to grab the mic stand beside him. Susan cocks her head and squeezes her eyes shut. When she reopens them, Dick is dressed in a shining suit of armor and holding a lance by his side. Susan closes her eyes again and shakes her head, then looks back up at Dick and gapes, wide-eyed.
They're going to be voting to make this country what you want it to be.
Jerry stares at her in curiosity.
Freedom, you feeling all right?
Opportunity.
Susan looks at him, her mouth still gaping as she tries to speak.
One of you, I try to convey all that in it, too. Thank you.
Now, outside in the hallway, Susan runs to catch up with Dick.
Mr. Nugent, my name is Susan Turner. I'm a student here.
No.
Yes. I loved your speech. Goodbye,
Thank
Mr.
You.
Nugent.
Dick watches two twin girls walk past as Susan runs her hand over the arm of his jacket.
Well, nice to have met you, Miss...
But you don't understand. I have to interview you.
You what?
For the high school paper. I'm the editor-in-chief.
Oh.
Shall we go somewhere where we can be alone?
Well, I'd like to, but
you know,
maybe
it
I
isn't
haven't...
every day that we have a famous artist here. I bet you've had a terribly interesting life.
Not very. Look, could we do this some other time? I have a date, you see.
And you're not married?
No.
Oh, I knew you weren't. You just couldn't be.
Oh, I've had some offers.
It's this way. We can talk in here.
Yes, but don't you see, I...
Please?
Dick shrugs, then walks past her into an office. She follows him in, shuts the door, and steps over to a desk to retrieve a notepad and pencil.
Have you ever been married?
No.
Have you ever been in love?
Yes, I have. Tell me, what kind of paper does this school run?
Oh, all the students read it.
I'll bet they do.
You probably have no idea what an unusual person you are. I can see it. I'm merely much older than I look. These are merely the vestments I don as a concession to our outworn educational anachronism. But I know what the artistic soul is like and how keenly it can suffer. Did you have many ordeals before you became a success?
No,
You can talk to me. I want you to think of me not as a newspaper woman, but as a friend.
Dick stares to the side.
Well, in that case, I'll tell you. I did suffer.
He sits across from her.
When I was 10, my mother and father had a double suicide pact. They made it. I was sent to an orphanage.
Some days they didn't beat me. Then one night I escaped. I ran away to New York. I used to steal.
What did you steal?
Beg your pardon?
What did you steal?
Crusts of bread and things.
As he nods, she does the same.
One time I stole a valise. There were paints and paintbrushes inside. So I began to paint.
He leans close.
Then they got me. I was sent to a reform school, but I escaped again.
Go on.
Back to New York. A wealthy society lady saw my work, fell in love with me, and sent me to art school. The rest is history.
How wonderful. How terribly wonderful.
Dick smiles, then glances at his watch.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I must rest.
Of course.
Goodbye, Miss Kilgallen.
Turner! Susan Turner. Oh, by the way, you remember what you said about painting one of us? America and the waving grain and everything?
Yes, I do.
Well, do you think I'd make a good model?
Oh, you're not thinking of quitting the newspaper game.
Oh, that's merely a stopgap. My family wants me to go into law, but I don't want to be a Portia.
Portia, well, that's something you and your family can straighten out.
Well, my attitude is that one female judge in the family is enough.
Did you say your name was Turner?
That's right. My sister's Judge Margaret Turner.
Nice to have met the family. Bye.
Well, what about my posing for you? What about young America?
Fine.
Then you think I'm ideal?
Sure, you'd make a good model sometime. Well, thanks for the interview. Bye.
Now, goodbye. Au revoir.
Over.
Susan follows him out of the office and into the hallway, staring dreamy-eyed. As she watches him stroll away, her eyes widen. Dick now wears the suit of armor again. Susan raises her eyebrows as he marches through a set of double doors, then turns back to face her. As she waves, he sets his helmet on his head and walks out of sight. Later, at the Turner home, Margaret enters through the front door and walks across the foyer, then turns and stops. She heads into the den where Susan stands gazing at a painting of a farmhouse on the wall. With her eyes fixed on the artwork, the teenager moves her hands in a framing pattern and tilts her head at different angles.
Something wrong?
That picture. It's hideous.
It's a very nice picture.
It has absolutely no simplicity. It's so busy. True art should unite the masses in every age, in every country. Mm.
Who lectured at school today?
What does that have to do with it?
Everything. Last month you wanted to be a designer. Then a naturalist gave a lecture and you thought it'd be very nice to be the first female deep sea diver. Last week you wanted to be a psychiatrist. And now you find our painting offensive. What does this artist look like?
He's wonderful. I interviewed him.
She reclines in an armchair.
I've never seen anyone in armor before.
Very few people have, Susan.
But you don't know how wonderful he is. He's had to lie and cheat and steal to get somewhere in life.
That makes everything just dandy. What's the name of this shining knight?
Richard Nugent.
Richard Nugent. Richard Nugent?
Have you heard of him?
Heard of him? We have a permanent courtroom set aside for him. How dare the Board of Education allow him to lecture in a public school?
What are you getting so excited about? All he did was talk about art, and he was very good.
Susan folds her arms and turns away.
Perhaps you're right. I suppose there's nothing wrong in his lecturing if it's sponsored by the school.
Susan stretches out her arms in a pose.
Have you ever thought of me as a model?
I can't honestly say that I have. Why?
Dickie wants me to pose for him.
Oh, isn't that nice? Dickie!
Now, don't be unreasonable, Margaret. He's really a very fine man. You don't know him at all.
I know enough about him to advise you to go back to deep sea diving.
I don't need your advice.
I'm your sister and your guardian. I'm acting in your own best interests.
You're going to make me an old maid.
Only until you're 18. When a suitable young man comes along, I'll be happy to see you married.
Yes, and you'll probably make him pass a lie detector test first.
I want you to forget all about Mr. Nugent.
Oh, that's easy for you to say. Why don't you run out of court order?
Susan storms away from her sister. Now Bessie walks across the foyer to the front door and opens it. Tommy steps in.
Good evening, Mr. Chambers.
Top of the evening to you, Bessie. Is the lady of the house in?
The lady of the house is practically out.
Hello, Your Honor.
Only a moment, Tommy.
Dressed in a fur coat and hat, Margaret opens the door to Susan's room.
Are you all right?
Oh, I'm fine. Just fine.
I'm sorry about
our... Oh, it's all right. It was really nothing. I'm just fine.
I'll be home early. Be a good girl. See you in the morning.
Goodbye. Have a good time.
As Margaret shuts the door, Susan gets up from her bed and tiptoes over to it. On the other side, Margaret descends the staircase.
Do
Do I detect an air of trouble?
I never enjoy quarreling with Susan.
The girl her age is entitled to growing pains, isn't she?
Yes, Susan's growing pains are rapidly becoming a major disease.
Now in a lobby, Susan saunters to a reception desk wearing a sophisticated jacket and skirt. A boy in a uniform turns to her.
Can I be of any assistance?
What apartment is Mr. Nugent in?
He isn't in any apartment.
Doesn't he live here?
Sure, but he isn't home. Anything I can do for you?
Thank you. I'll wait.
Is he expecting you?
I'm going to pose for him.
Oh. Do you want to wait upstairs?
Do you think it would be all right?
Sure, I'll take you up. You're new around here.
Yes.
I'm 15.
I'm 17.
That's okay. I like older women.
Upstairs, he holds open the elevator doors.
Mademoiselle.
He gestures out to the hallway as she steps past him. He then runs ahead and unlocks the door to a dark apartment.
Here we are.
He flips on the lights as she enters.
Some layout, huh?
This is where he lives.
I like to hang around, but I got work to do. Make yourself at home.
He leaves, shutting the door behind him. Susan walks across the living room, then stops in front of a step leading to an elevated den where paints are set up near an easel. She looks around, taking it all in. Susan turns back to the living room and heads over to a pair of overstuffed armchairs. She notices a hardcover book on a coffee table, then picks it up and reads the spine. She gently sets the book back down and takes a seat in one of the armchairs. After settling briefly, she rises and steps forward, engaging in a make-believe conversation, then sits on a couch opposite the armchair. She extends her arm with a flourish. She continues mouthing words to her imaginary guests, then daintily leans forward, resting her chin on her hand. She leans back on the sofa cushion. Now at the Turner house, Margaret stands in the den, staring at a clock on the fireplace mantel.
When did you first discover that she was gone?
About dinner time when I went to call her, she wasn't in her room.
What time was that?
About 7:15.
Did she leave a note?
I didn't find any.
Were there any signs of a struggle?
Oh, no,
stop
sir.
Stop conducting this like a criminal investigation. Bessie, you may go.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're the assistant district attorney. Why don't you do something?
But Margaret, I've got to have some clues to go on. So far, we've only been able to send out a description.
Have you checked the hospitals?
Yes, my men have checked the hospitals, the airports, the radio stations, the bus terminals. Have you called all her friends?
Hours ago. She had a date with a boy named Jerry White. When he got here, she'd already gone.
Tommy follows Margaret to a telephone on a desk.
Hello? It's for you.
Hello. Yes, Chamberlain speaking. No, she was alone. Yes, keep a man there. And Keeley, check the morgue. Right. I'm sorry, Margaret. It's just a matter of routine. I remember a very important murder case where the body was found
Tommy,
in the morgue.
Tommy, if anything's happened to Susan, I'll never forgive myself. I shouldn't have quarreled with her.
What did you quarrel about?
It was nothing. I told her she couldn't pose for Richard Nugent. She said she didn't need my advice, that she was...
Margaret freezes in realization and slowly gazes off. Now, Dick, dressed in a tuxedo, enters his apartment and locks the door behind him with a key. He pitches his hat onto a table, then flips off the light switch. He heads across the dark room, loosening his bow tie. Dick stops next to the coffee table where the hardcover book sits dangling over the edge. He picks it up, taps it lightly, and sets it down on a cabinet, then makes his way up a staircase, undoing his shirt buttons. Behind him, hidden by shadows on the living room couch, Susan lies asleep. Later, Dick heads down the stairs wearing a robe. He strolls over to the cabinet and flips a switch on the radio console, then picks up the book.
Aggravated by the imponderables of international currency fluctuations,
Dick turns the radio dial, smiles, and strolls across the room with a hardcover book. Approaching a small bar, he tucks the book under his arm and pours some liquor into a glass. He then holds the glass under a seltzer bottle and adds soda water. He heads to the armchair and turns on a lamp, then sets his drink down on a round side table. As he turns to sit, he pulls the book out from under his arm and rolls his shoulders. He starts to sit, then stops and grabs a pillow from the edge of the couch and sets it on the chair. As he settles against the pillow, he cracks open the book and crosses his legs.
He takes a sip of his drink and begins to read.
Hello, Mr. Nugent.
Dick glances behind his chair, then cocks his head. Susan sits up on the couch.
Dickie, hello.
He bolts upright as he sees her. They both turn toward the door. Tommy and Margaret stand outside.
Come on, let us in.
In the apartment, Dick springs up from his chair.
And now we bring you Del Minnelli in that sensational swoon tune, Last Ride in a Patrol Wagon.
Dick's eyes widen. Now a police car speeds down a highway. Daytime, Dick sits in a jail cell with Walters.
Tell me exactly what happened.
If I knew exactly what happened, I wouldn't be here.
Give me a rough idea.
Where were you when they finally let me use the telephone around here last night? Where were you?
I had not anticipated your winding up in jail. I have a life of my own, you know.
I'm so sorry. I hope I haven't inconvenienced you.
No, not at all.
Sleep well, a good breakfast and everything?
Let's have the facts.
Sit down.
Walter sits beside him on the cot.
Get a load of this.
Dick stands.
I got home to my apartment last night. That much I know. And this girl was there. At least I think she was there. Well, I guess she was. I don't know.
Turner's sister?
Yes, that's the girl.
Young girl?
What'd you say?
Young girl?
Too young.
Nugent, why don't you tell me the truth?
I am telling you the truth. Now, will you be quiet for a moment? That's what happened last night. Nobody listened to me. I couldn't explain. Now, please. All right. I got home to my apartment last night. I went up to my bedroom. Took off my dinner coat. Wanted to be comfortable. Put on a robe. Came downstairs, turned on the radio. Got a nice highball. Opened a book, sat down to read the book. When up popped this little girl. Another little girl. Popped up. There's a banging at the door. Everybody yelling. Somebody busts in. Everybody starts talking at once.
Did the girl...
Don't listen to an explanation. They're all mad.
Did the girl explain why she was there?
Yes. Well, she tried to explain. But they wouldn't really let her explain. She kept trying to say she'd come up there to be a model or something. That's about all I know about that.
Did you...
Now that this...
Or did you not invite her up there to be a model?
Well, yes, in a roundabout way, I guess I did. I guess I did. She kept saying that I told her I was going to paint her as young America.
Did you tell her that?
Oh, I told that to 500 little girls.
Well, let's not go into that. You're charged with hitting the district attorney. Did you or did you not hit him?
I hit him. That's right. But at the time I hit him, I did not know he was the assistant district attorney. If I had known he was the assistant district attorney, I would have hit him. He said some bad things, some very bad things. Wouldn't give me a chance to explain. Kept pulling on my arm. Wouldn't let the little girl explain. And that sister of hers, that's a mountain of ice, a gallon of poison. Jumping to conclusions.
Control yourself now. Control yourself, Nugent. I'll see what I can do for you. Worst comes to worst, maybe I can get your sentence reduced. But you have got to remember coherently exactly what happened.
Oh, sure.
If you talk like this in front of a court, you'd get 20 years.
Dick stares wide-eyed as Walters turns away.
Officer, I'm ready to go now.
Coherently? Exactly. Coherently, exactly.
See you later. You'll know me. I'll be dressed like a lawyer.
Muttering to himself, Dick goes over his story, then throws his hands up in frustration.
Model. Mr. Nugent, we've got a visitor. This is Dr. Beamish.
The guard opens the cell door and Matt enters. Dick mumbles and gestures, oblivious to the visitor.
Mr. Nugent?
Just a second.
Dick waves him away absently.
I'm the court psychiatrist.
Dick glares up at him.
Come back in an hour. I'll be crazy by then.
I'm really here to help you. The only thing you're suffering from is a severe case of being an innocent bystander.
Dick reflects for a moment.
Sit down, doctor.
Thank you.
Dick slides down to make room on the cot. The doctor grins and sits next to him.
May I offer you a drink?
No, thanks.
Cigar?
No, I'm fine, thanks. Is cell comfortable?
Well, I don't quite know. I haven't anything to compare it with. This is my first time.
Oh. Well, on the whole, I think you'll find our Western penology system is quite modern.
Well, that's a load off my mind. Tell me, what can they do to me if I kill a judge?
I understand how you feel. I'm aware that Judge Turner appears to be a very dominant woman, but her dominance is actually retreat.
Is that so?
We call it a manifestation of the Oedipus complex. Mm. As Menninger so clearly points out, Traumatic events seem to...
The only traumatic event she needs is a good smack in the jaw.
She's my niece. But you're absolutely right.
Judge Turner's ready for you, Doctor.
Oh, thank you. Now, you just leave things in my hands, Mr. Nugent. And I dare say you'll be surprised at the results.
Dare say.
Matt heads to the cell door, then turns around.
I have a plan.
He walks off. Now in her chambers, Margaret walks to a window and stares out, then turns and sees Matt at the door.
Just had a talk with Nugent. He seems to be quite a nice fellow.
Sure you were talking to the right man?
Why, certainly. About 6 feet, broad shoulders, blue eyes.
He has brown eyes.
Oh, has he?
Matt grins to himself.
Margaret, have you made any definite plans about Nugent?
It isn't my case. Judge Treadwell is viewing the evidence, and whatever he does is all right with me.
Oh. Well, I hope Treadwell doesn't go too far. I won't be responsible for Susan.
Sitting on her desk, Matt plays with a pencil. Margaret takes it from him.
You were saying?
Susan's in love, or thinks she is, with this man, and if things take their normal course, the incident will become no more than an adolescent attachment for an older man. In a few weeks, she will have forgotten all about him. But if they send him to prison on her account, it'll martyr him in Susan's eyes. The affair will turn into a tragedy she'll never get over.
Oh, nonsense. You don't understand, Susan. She's not like other children. She's old for her age and level-headed. She's above that sort of silliness.
The jailhouse guard enters, dragging in a squirming, black-veiled woman.
I'm sorry to bother you, Judge Turner, but this lady came to visit Mr. Nugent. She claims to be your sister and his mother.
He unveils Susan.
I just wanted to talk to him, Margaret.
About the steel business. She baked this.
He holds up a metal file. Margaret blinks.
Thank you, Melvin.
The guard turns and leaves as Susan hangs her head.
What's happening to you? I'm in love with him. Don't you realize that? If I lose him, life has no meaning. I love him.
Susan slumps in a chair and buries her face in her hand. Margaret turns to her uncle.
How about a reversal?
You win.
Now in Judge Treadwell's chambers.
Come in.
A guard leads Dick inside.
Here's Mr. Nugent.
Walters approaches him.
Hello, Richard. Well, you don't look any the worse for wear. Prison agrees with me.
Mr. Nugent, I have good news.
You're going to hang me.
I'm afraid I'm the one who ought to be hanged.
Dick shifts his eyes.
Won't I sit down?
Please do. I believe you know Dr. Beamish.
Yes.
This is Judge Treadwell.
How do you do?
Oh, how do you do?
You know Assistant District Attorney Chamberlain.
Yes, nice to see you again. I'm sorry about that little misunderstanding.
Forget it, just a bit of temper.
That's very generous of you.
Not at all, Nugent.
I'm afraid I lost my temper, too, last night. I hope you'll pardon me.
Oh, that's all right. I hope you'll pardon me.
I want to thank you for holding this preliminary hearing in camera.
Perfectly all right, Chester. In view of Mr. Nugent's reputation, I see no reason for exposing him to any unnecessary publicity. I think this little incident can be straightened out amicably if the assistant district attorney doesn't wish to press charges.
Well, I wouldn't want to see a man of Mr. Nugent's talents in jail. Well, thank you. I guess I'm free to go then, huh? Thank you.
Just a moment. I believe Judge Turner has a suggestion.
Anything?
Yes, it isn't really much. You see, I'm a little worried about Susan.
Oh, yeah.
She's become quite enamored of you, Mr. Nugent.
Well, it's...
And we were wondering if you'd mind helping us by taking her out.
Oh, I'd be glad to. Doing what?
Being her beau, just until she gets over you. You see, Dr. Beamish says she mustn't feel you're being martyred.
Oh, he does he? Well, let Dr. Beamish take her out. Let her get over him. I'm not a judge, but I bet there's no law that says I have to go out with children.
No one is trying to force you to do anything, Mr. Nugent. We were hoping that you'd want to cooperate.
Why should I?
Because your attitude will have a decided bearing on the disposition of the other charges against you if the assistant district attorney chooses to press them.
Press what? All I did was punch him in the nose.
Mr. Walters, if you were a judge and a man was brought before you who had enticed a 17-year-old girl to his apartment on the pretext of painting her portrait, and when her family protested, brutally assaulted the assistant district attorney, what would you do to this man?
Why, I'd give him 20 years.
Exactly what I'd do.
Wait a minute, which side are you on? You haven't proved it. You haven't proved it.
We will.
That's for the jury to decide.
Mr. Walters, if you were a judge and the same man realized that this young girl was unfortunately in love with him and agreed to cooperate fully to help her get over him, wouldn't you be inclined to be lenient?
I certainly would.
Of course.
I think I'd drop the charges.
Exactly what I'd do.
Dick looks around the room, his brow furrowed.
What do I have to do?
You will see Susan as often as we deem proper. As soon as your fatal fascination wears off, you're free to go on your way.
And what if it doesn't wear off?
It will.
Oh.
Mr. Nugent, please don't have any illusions about this matter. I'm doing this against my better judgment. I would just as soon my sister were going out with an actor.
Judge Turner doesn't exactly mean that.
No, I'm just wondering.
She means as head of the psychiatric clinic that I've recommended you as a vital therapy measure.
Dick turns from the smiling psychiatrist to his lawyer.
That's great. Recommended for children.
Now in a high school gymnasium, two teams warm up on opposite sides of a basketball court. As a player shoots the ball, Dick and Susan walk arm in arm down the stands. Dressed in a dark jacket and tie, Dick waits politely in the aisle as Susan takes a seat in the front row. In the row behind, a boy covers his mouth and leans into the girl beside him.
Get him.
The two kids look away innocently as Dick glowers at them. He takes a seat next to Susan.
This row is reserved for the faculty and important members of the student body. I hope you like basketball.
Crazy about it.
As the teams head to the sidelines, an elderly man crosses in front of the couple.
Good evening, Susan. Geometry getting straightened out?
Yes, Mr. Mitwick.
Your handkerchief, Mr. Mitwick.
Oh, thank you. Oh, you must be a new boy. We'll probably be running into each other.
I gave a lecture here on art.
Oh, yes. You're in Miss Hallep's class. Excellent teacher. Excellent.
Dick shakes his head as Susan giggles.
There they go!
The players run out onto the court and take their positions. At tip-off, Jerry knocks the ball to his teammates, who quickly pass it back to him. As he dribbles down the court, an opposing player grabs onto the ball. The two wrestle for control. As the referee takes the ball, Jerry bends over with his hands on his knees and smiles at Susan. Looking away from him, she wraps her arm around Dick's. As his brow furrows, Jerry misses the ref tossing up the ball between him and the opposing player. The other team quickly takes control and drives down court where they easily score a basket. A little later, the opposing team scores another basket. As fans jump up in their seats, two cheerleaders along the sidelines extend their arms and begin a routine. Susan swings her fist zealously. Dick does the same. On court, the Sunset team puts the ball into play. Jerry glances out at Susan, then turns back to the game and misses a pass. The opposing team immediately takes possession of the ball and scores yet again. In the stands, Susan shakes her head.
We had a much better team last season, but our star center graduated.
Too bad.
I think our new center needs more experience.
Oh, at least.
He used to be sort of a boyfriend of mine.
Dick turns to her.
What?
Oh, until I met you.
You mean that fine-looking young man who smiled at you? Number 7?
Yes, that's the one. He's just a child.
Is he in love with you?
Oh, I suppose so. But you needn't be jealous, Richard. He's really terribly unsophisticated.
Dick's eyes shift back and forth. Back in the game, the Sunset players pass the ball down the court between themselves. As it reaches Jerry, he dribbles around an opposing player and approaches the basket. He takes a shot and misses by several feet. Another Sunset player approaches the ref.
Lie down.
Jerry heads to the bench and grabs his warm-up jacket. The coach steps over to him.
Sit it out for a while and get your mind back on the game.
Yes, sir.
Jerry sits and watches the game with a pained look. Dick leans into Susan.
Yes, fine figure of a man. I'd like to meet him.
That can be arranged.
She turns to Jerry and beckons him over with a finger. Jerry reluctantly stands from the bench and walks over.
That's a great game you're playing, Mr.
Jerry White, Richard Nugent.
How do you do?
Usually my game is much better, but it's kind of off lately.
You know, personal troubles.
It's too bad that when schools depend on their athletes to give their very best, that certain athletes are selfishly concerned with their own problems instead of beating PB High.
Oh, I don't know, Susan. Why don't we all get together, talk it over? How about joining us for a drink? A soda after the game.
You really mean that?
Certainly.
But gee, I'd love to. Thanks, Mr. Nugent.
Jerry shakes his hand, then runs off. As Susan glowers at Dick, Jerry walks up to the coach.
I feel a lot better now, Coach. Sure would like to get back in the game.
All right, go in for Bachman.
Thanks.
Jerry pulls off his jacket and runs over to the ref.
White for Bachman.
The referee places the whistle in his mouth. He tosses the ball in the air. Sunset quickly takes possession and passes the ball back and forth across the court. As Jerry gets a hold of it, he leaps up to the basket and sinks a shot. The Sunset fans stand in their seats and applaud, while Susan sits stone-faced next to a cheering Dick. Now at a crowded ice cream parlor, a waitress pushes past several swing-dancing couples to Dick and Susan's table. As a twirling dancer bumps into Dick, the waitress sets down a sundae in front of Susan. Dick stares at her three-scoop banana split as the waitress sets a glass of water in front of him, then leaves the check. Susan digs into her sundae.
You know, I feel sorry for Jerry.
You do? Why?
I used to play a lot of basketball when I was a kid, about 20 years ago.
Oh, I bet you were wonderful.
Not nearly as good as Jerry. And I know a champ when I see one. He's off his game because of you.
You think so?
I know so. It's awful what a woman can do to a man. But look at history. Caesar and Cleopatra.
Napoleon and Josephine.
All of them. Behind every defeated man, there's a frustrated love.
You're right.
You bet I'm right.
And I promise, all my life, never to hurt you.
It was a tough game.
Oh, hello, Jerry.
But we won.
Certainly, through no help from you, Mr. White.
Oh, you're wrong, Susan. I thought he played a splendid game.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did.
No, I didn't.
The waitress returns.
What will you have?
I'm not very hungry. I'll just have a double sweetheart flip.
Aren't you supposed to be in training?
Sometimes a man just doesn't care.
You see? I know how you feel.
You do, huh? Mm. Well, I may as well level with you, Mr. Nugent. When Susan told me about you and her, I was sore. You can't blame me, can you?
Well, no, Jerry.
When I saw you tonight, my first instinct was to take a poke at you.
Jerry!
Let me finish. I thought about it. Then I said to myself, let's be civilized. This is life, and if Susan feels that way, it's all right with me.
That's big of you, Jerry, and very generous.
I don't see why we can't still be friends.
Of course we can.
No matter what happens.
That's the way I feel, and Dick and I will always treasure your friendship.
If I can do anything for either one of you, all you have to do is call Jerry.
And if we
call
can ever Jerry. Do anything for you, all you have to do is just ask.
Yeah, get in touch, you know, call up.
Well, I guess it's goodbye, Jerry.
I guess it is.
I guess it is.
Dick looks off, biting his fingernail. Nighttime. Dick drives his convertible down the street and parks in front of the Turner house. As Susan waits in the passenger seat, he climbs out and walks around to her door.
Oh, Susan.
Yes, dear?
Now, it isn't becoming for you to call me dear and darling and all that. I don't think it's right.
Why, darling?
Now, stop that. Now, listen. The basketball game was fun tonight, but it can't go on.
Yes, I know. The season's over next week.
No, Susan. Oh, wait a minute. I mean, the whole thing can't go on. Now, listen, you got me into all this trouble. You came up to my apartment. You told your sister I asked you to pose for me.
Well, that's true in a way.
Now, that isn't so, and you know it. But let's not argue about it. The point is that everyone now has the crazy idea that you're in love with me.
I am.
Dick follows her through the front gate.
Look at me. Susan, I wouldn't say this to many people, but I'm old enough to be your father.
You're so right, dear.
Honey, you've got to realize that this isn't proper for either of us.
You're so right, dear.
Well, it's not only going to It's not only going to embarrass me, but it's going to embarrass you, too, believe me.
You're so right, dear.
Susan, you're in a rut. You're not paying any attention to me.
You're so right, dear.
Tommy opens the front door.
Well, good evening, Susan. Good evening, Nugent. Glad to see you kids home early.
We're not home yet. We will be in a second.
Did you have a good time? Was the game fun?
He grabs Dick's arm.
How'd you like a cigarette?
I'm not allowed to smoke yet.
Sorry, I haven't any bubble gum.
Good night, Tommy.
Oh, Nugent, by the way, we're having a little birthday party Saturday for my niece. We'd love to have you come. She'll be six.
How's your jaw?
Fine. Why?
Because the worst I can get is 90 days.
Temper, temper. Well, toodaloo, kids.
Tommy leaves wearing a wide grin. Dick opens the front door for Susan.
Hello, Margaret.
Hello, Susan.
Good evening, Mr. Nugent.
Good evening.
That's the new dress.
Yes. Like it?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's too bad you had to go to that dreary dinner for some lawyer.
It was a very nice party. Did you enjoy yourself?
Oh, we had a simply sensational time.
I think you better turn in now. School tomorrow. You have to get up early.
Yes, of course. Good night, Tiki.
She kisses her finger and taps it on his chin.
Good night, Susan.
He blows her a dispassionate kiss.
Good night, Margaret.
Good night, dear.
Susan pauses on the staircase.
Good night, Tiki.
Good night, Susan.
Margaret glares at him as Susan goes to her room. Dick suppresses a grin.
Well, good night.
Good night.
As Margaret follows him to the door, he turns around to face her.
You know, that is a beautiful dress, and you look wonderful in it.
Thank you. You said that gracefully, perhaps a result of practice.
You said that ungraciously, perhaps a result of practice.
I had that coming.
Got a moment?
Yes.
He motions toward the front porch with his hat. She steps outside warily. He motions again and follows her to a pair of white patio chairs, then gestures for her to sit. As she takes a seat, he sits opposite her, smiling.
That's right.
Margaret sits primly, avoiding his gaze.
My mother was quite a remarkable woman. She taught piano. And funnily enough, children liked to take lessons from her. Well, anyway, I had a habit of reading a lot of books she didn't want me to read, and not reading books she wanted me to read.
I'd say that was a perfectly healthy, normal attitude.
Well, one day downstairs, I found a book that had a very racy title. So I sneaked it up to my room. Started to read it. I kept on reading for a long time. It was awful dull. I kept on with it. And then suddenly I discovered Mother had stuck a philosophy book underneath that paper cover with the racy title. Anyway, I waded through the thing, hoping for the best. And although I never did come across anything exciting, I learned quite a lot about philosophy.
I suppose that's one way of learning something.
Yeah, isn't it? Well, I learned something else. Simple but true. Never judge a book by its cover. All is not gold that glitters. Things may not be what they appear to be.
It's very interesting, Mr. Nugent. My father was a judge. When he gave me a book about law, I knew it was going to be about law.
Ah, yes, yes. And when you meet a man who's labeled artist, you know he's going to be all you think an artist is supposed to be.
Concerning you, I sat in judgment on a series of facts, not on your character or biography.
Ah, well, I just took the long way around to tell you that when I said there was a beautiful dress and you look wonderful in it, I sincerely meant it.
I'm sorry. I've never been subjected to so much charm before.
Well, I'm afraid we're wasting a perfectly beautiful moon, and I'm keeping you up. Good night.
Oh, we'll see you on Saturday. You're coming to take Susan to the picnic.
Yes, yes, yes. I'll be here. Don't worry. With my very best Saturday picnic charm. Good night, Gerona.
Good night.
Margaret watches him walk off, then turns away from the house and leans against a deck post. Daytime. Driving his convertible, Dick pulls up in front of the Turner house. Jerry waits in his jalopy. As Dick gets out and walks over, Jerry sits at the wheel, resting his head on his hand.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Mr. Nugent.
What are you doing out here?
Well, you know how it is. It's hard to get Susan out of your system.
Yeah, I know how it is. Why don't you go on inside?
I'm not welcome inside.
Oh, don't be silly. Susan probably doesn't know you're out here all alone.
She put me here.
Oh.
I'm a square in Susan's social circle. It's not her fault, I guess. It's her uncle, Judge Thaddeus. You met him yet?
No.
Oh, he's something fierce. I walked in, and all I said was, mellow greetings, Yuki Dookie. He almost blew a fuse.
Well, what's wrong with that? Sounds okay to me.
Oh, I don't know. I guess he's been around lawyers so long he's forgotten how people talk.
Sure, mellow greetings, you.
Dick's eyes widen.
You going to the picnic?
Well, I was, but...
I'd like to use my car.
Jerry looks at the shiny convertible.
You're kidding.
No, I'd like to borrow yours. Does it run?
Oh, sure.
Where are the keys?
You don't need a key.
Oh, well, here are the keys to mine.
Jiminy, thanks, Mr. Nugent.
See you at the picnic.
Jerry heads toward Dick's convertible.
Boy, she sure is a honey.
Just a later model.
As Jerry starts the car, Dick goes to the front door. Watching Jerry drive off, he rolls up his pant cuffs, exposing his ankles. He takes off his tie and shoves it into the pocket of his houndstooth jacket, then pops up the brim of his hat. Inside, Susan brings a picnic basket into the parlor, joining Margaret, Thaddeus, and Matt.
Oh, that must be Richard Nugent.
And who the devil is Richard Nugent?
He's older. He's come to take Susan to the picnic. I think you'll like him.
How in blazes do you know? I haven't seen him yet.
Dick bounces in.
Hi. Mel greetings, Yuki Dookie.
Dickie.
Ready, Poop? Let's scoot.
Wheat.
Wheat. Hey, you remind me of a man.
What man?
The man with the power.
What power?
The power of hoodoo.
Hoodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of a man.
What man?
Man with the power.
What
good
power?
Morning.
Power of Greetings, greetings.
Are you out of your mind?
What?
What are you trying to do?
I don't dig your chick.
What are you whispering about?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hi, Uncle Matt. How's
Dick operating? Shakes hands vigorously.
May I present my great-uncle, Judge Turner?
How do you do?
You, Judge?
Oh, this isn't a pump handle.
He's sharp. Hey, you remind me of a man.
What man?
The man with the power.
What power?
The power of hoodoo.
Hoodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of a man.
Remind you? Oh.
Judge Turner is an associate justice of the state Supreme Court.
Good for you, Junior. Better than working for a living.
Aren't we going to be late for the picnic?
Yes, we are.
I'm a little pepper shaker. The hot rod's outside.
Backing toward the door, Dick and Susan break into Jivey Swing Step.
Come on, Thaddeus.
As they head out, Thaddeus rubs his chin.
You remind me of a man.
Hoodoo.
No, I'm supposed to say that.
Go ahead.
Outside, Dick dashes to open the front gate for Susan, and the others follow toward the jalopy.
That's Jerry's car.
Just looks like it.
He opens the door for her.
What's this?
A friend of mine made it. It's a boot eight. Eight more payments and it's mine.
You expect me to ride in that?
Just throw your frame in.
Margaret, I want to talk to you.
No, come on, Thaddeus.
No,
there's no
I think
time.
I'd rather stay
there's
home.
There's no time for talking. Oh, come on.
The three adults get in the back seat. Thank you. Dick peels off, jostling the passengers. Now in a park, kids play and grown-ups sit at picnic tables listening to the musicians on a bandstand. Dick drives the jalopy onto the grounds. Susan waves from the car at Tommy, who looks up from a hot dog. Grinning, he waves back with his hat, then gapes at the jalopy. He strides over as the car pulls to a stop.
Nice car you got here, Richard. Thank you.
Thaddeus dodders from the back seat.
Oh, I just hope you come up before me sometime.
Must run in your family.
Margaret steps out and goes to Tommy.
Hello, Tommy.
Margaret, I've been waiting for you.
I'm sorry, we were delayed.
Hi, Miss Chamberlain, look out for your thumb.
Well, if it isn't the junior set. Hello, Uncle Thaddeus.
How do you do? Oh, my God.
Uncle Thaddeus, can I get something for you?
Yes, get me a nice seat that doesn't bounce.
We can eat our lunch over there. Come on, Dickie.
I'm as hungry as a bear. Let's join the ants.
Dick and Susan skip off with a basket, now at a roped-off area.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first events of the afternoon are the novelty races. Open to adults, parents, and friends.
The group watches from behind the rope.
I used to be pretty good at these things when I was a kid.
Well, why don't you get in? It's open to parents.
I'm not a parent.
What's the matter? Too old now, Chamberlain?
Of course not.
Of course not.
Tommy takes off his jacket.
All right, then, I will.
How about you?
Don't be silly.
Oh, Dickie, you must. I want a medal.
Get her a medal.
Oh, too old, eh?
What, to run in a sack race? There's nothing to it.
Then go in there and show them, Dickie.
They all look at him.
All right, I will.
Dick removes his jacket.
Hold that.
Hold this.
He and Tommy head for the starting line.
Let's go down to the finish line. I want to see Dickie when he comes in first.
Coming, Uncle Matt?
No. You go ahead. I'll wait right here.
Two more lanes open. Who'll step up?
Dick and Tommy step into gunny sacks.
Step right up and get yourself a sack. Okay, Jack, you all set? All right, steady now. Ready, gentlemen? On your marks. Get set.
Dick hops into the lead down the chalked lane, and Susan cheers him on from the sideline. As Dick looks back at Tommy in the lane next to his, a contestant falls into Dick's lane. Dick trips, and Susan and Margaret gasp. As the other contestant scoots off, Dick stands and puts his hands on his hips. The sack drops to his ankles as he starts to walk away, and he falls on his face. Later.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're all set for the start of the spectacular three-legged race.
Tommy exchanges a look with Dick, grins, and shows his medal from the gunny sack race. An official ties Dick's left leg to the right leg of a blonde teen.
All right, Jack, On your marks, get set.
Dick and his partner stride down their lane. Their hobbled steps get out of sync and they careen across the path and fall. On the sidelines, Susan and Margaret frown. Now Tommy wears two medals pinned to his shirt.
All right, everybody, we're all set for the spoon and potato race. On your marks, get set.
Each man holds a spoon in his mouth with a potato balanced on the end. Striding forward, Tommy's potato falls to the ground. As Dick nears the finish line, another man loses his potato and it rolls in Dick's path. Dick slips on the potato and his feet fling up, breaking the finish line tape. A judge stands over him.
Disqualified. You've got to cross the line on your feet.
Still holding the spoon in his mouth, Dick sits on one potato as his hand squashes another. He wipes his hand on his shirt. Now another race.
On your marks, get set.
Margaret roots from the sidelines. Susan looks at her sister. In a wheelbarrow race, a man holds Dick's legs as Dick races on his hands. As his partner rushes forward, Dick falls. Susan pouts and frowns. As Tommy bows to the crowd, a judge pins a fourth medal on his shirt. Later, the crowd gathers around a man with a megaphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This is the main event of the afternoon. You are about to witness the spectacular obstacle race.
As Tommy runs in place and flexes his arms, Susan pins the number three on Dick's shirt. His sweaty face is smudged with dirt.
Come on, Dickie, stand up. I can't pin it when you're sitting down. Don't you think you've had enough?
Not for me.
We've just begun to fight.
Just begun to fight.
Will you hold all these medals for me, Uncle Thad? I don't want to be handicapped with any excess weight.
Everybody get ready. All contestants report to the starting line.
Come on, Dickie. I know you can win this time.
Sure, sure.
This is the last call.
Hi, Mr. Nugent.
Oh, hello, Jerry. Where have you been?
I've been trying out that super jalopy of yours. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Jerry. Now remember, Dickie, you've got to win me that cup.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
You going in the race?
Yep.
May the best man win.
He will.
As Dick turns to respond, Tommy walks off.
I'm beginning to worry about.
Why?
He's got courage, a man's man.
I hope he wins.
Matt does a double take.
For Susan's sake.
Of course.
Let's go down to the finish line.
Tommy, Jerry, and Dick stand shoulder to shoulder.
All you contestants, take your places on the starting line. And remember, anyone who fails to take a single obstacle is disqualified. On your marks, get set.
All the contestants sprint down the track. One youth falls, tripping the man next to him. As they crawl through hurdles, another youth dives in front of a man, knocking him over. As they all rush onward, a teen pulls a contestant's shirt over his head. The man scrambles around and runs into the crowd of bystanders. Now Dick and Tommy are in the lead as they hop from hole to hole across a group of tires. Dick loses his shoe, then goes back to grab it. He hops in place and puts it on. Now at a row of four barrels, Tommy is the first to crawl through. Dick follows close behind as the group comes to a maze of hurdles. Two guys move some of the hurdles, blocking the paths and sending runners behind them in the wrong direction. Tommy and Dick are neck and neck, approaching hanging ropes. They leap up and start to climb. As one youth rolls on the ground, tripping a runner, another pulls a climber's pants down. As Dick struggles on his rope, Jerry grins at him. He steps beneath Dick. He takes a straight pin from his number and pokes Dick's rear end. Dick quickly climbs to the pole at the top of the rope, shuffles hand over hand along it, and slides down to the ground. Up ahead, Tommy steps onto one of several logs bridging a pond. Jerry bumps into him from behind, and they both fall in the water. Jerry swims off.
You pushed me!
Now Dick is in the lead as he runs to the finish line and breaks the tape. The event judge rushes over.
Congratulations, Mr. Nugent. Everybody over to the bandstand for the grand award.
Of course you were.
Grand award, Mr. Nugent, that's you.
Oh, sure. Grand reward.
As Dick leaves with the judge, Susan smiles at Jerry.
Thanks a lot, Jerry, for letting Dickie win.
That's okay. You pay the boys Saturday, 75 cents apiece. There's anyone but you that has charged a buck.
I'll pay you Saturday, too.
Well, I don't want any of your money. Some things just can't be bought.
You know, Jerry, at times you're really very nice.
They both smile. Now at the bandstand, Dick and the judge proudly stride to a table with a loving cup and a medal on it. Grinning, Matt and Margaret applaud.
It gives me great pleasure to present this beautiful trophy and medal to that great athlete and winner of the feature event, Mr. Richard Nugent.
Smiling, Dick accepts the trophy as the judge pins the medal on his shirt. Margaret and Matt beam as Dick steps forward. Dick holds out the trophy.
I don't know how this happened to me. I guess I owe it all to clean living, proper outlook, and the help of my friend.
Margaret grins and Matt nods approvingly. Then Margaret's grin fades. She blinks her eyes as a brilliant light reflects on her face. Dick bows in a shining suit of armor. Margaret blinks and her brow furrows. Later, in the Turner house.
No.
Susan pulls him around.
Susan, your youthful exuberance is very tiring. Margaret, I'm going upstairs to take a hot bath.
Ah, life.
Susan holds out her arms.
Susan, I think you'd better rest for a while. You've had a busy day, and you're going to a dance tonight.
Quite right. But I would like this day to never end. I'd like everything to stay suspended, beautiful.
Well, you can leave everything suspended after I sit down.
Margaret picks up the picnic basket.
I'll take it, Margaret.
No, I think you'd better go out now.
All right, sis.
As Susan rushes off, Matt takes a seat by the fireplace. Margaret eyes the phone, hesitantly reaches for it, then withdraws her hand. She starts toward the dining room, then turns and stares again at the phone. With a quick glance at Matt, she picks up the phone and carries it with her into the dining room. Holding the phone and the basket, she stands in place. Matt looks up and casts a wry smile her way. She turns and sets the basket down on the table, then stares down at the phone. Matt gets up and approaches her.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. A very odd thing happened to me today, Uncle Matt. I think it's very simple to explain. Optical illusions have been known to, or the power of suggestion through Susan. These things have been, obviously what happened to me was a combination of the heat, a too hurried lunch, and all the excitement.
Of course.
I think it was merely a question of my thinking that I thought I saw him, you understand?
Oh, sure. That's all perfectly clear. The same thing has happened to me.
In view of this, however, it occurred to me that
Mr. Nugent?
That Mr. Nugent has been very sweet about Susan, and I don't think we ought to embarrass him any longer.
Oh, yes, but what if Susan has...
I think Susan's romance is an adolescent one, and I think she'll get over it. And I think we owe it to Mr. Nugent to, Well, I'd like to talk this over with him, as a matter of fact.
Well, I think that's...
I don't think it'd be a good idea to have him here, because with Susan in the house, we couldn't talk freely here.
Oh, naturally.
And I certainly don't think it'd be proper of me to invite myself to his apartment.
Oh, no, naturally not.
So the obvious thing to do is arrange a convenient meeting place, something public, sophisticated, and, we can talk things over. Yes.
Well...
Thank you very much, Uncle Matt, for talking to me. You've cleared things up considerably.
Oh, that's all right. Nothing at all. I appreciate your confidence, Margaret.
Isn't it extraordinary how simple problems become when you just don't let your emotions run away with you?
True, true.
Where's the telephone?
She holds it in her hand. Now Dick enters his apartment, clutching the trophy to his chest, and struggles to free his key from the lock. He steadies the door with his foot and pulls the key out of the keyhole. Eyeing his trophy, he cocks his head and tosses his hat onto an easy chair. He holds the trophy up, glancing around, then settles the loving cup on an end table. With an admiring gaze, he shifts on his feet and looks at it from various angles. With his hands in his pockets, he shrugs and smiles at an imaginary guest, then points to his new prize. He glances apologetically to the chair, then gets the phone.
Hello? Yeah. Anything wrong with Susan? Oh, can't go, huh? Well, sorry to hear that. Will you tell her? Yeah.
He starts to sit, then frowns.
With you?
He sinks toward the chair.
Yeah, I'd be delighted.
He sits in front of his hat.
Oh, what, do you want me to come over there? Oh, I see, yeah. You wouldn't want to come over here, would you? Oh, naturally. Well, we can meet any place you say.
Dick pushes his hat aside.
Yeah, we celebrate my triumph.
He lays back in the chair.
Well, no, I'm not too tired to dance. You dance? Okay, anything you say. Well, let's see now. I know the head waiter at the TikTok Club. How about that?
He grins.
Fine. Sure. Okay.
He blankly stares at the phone.
Come in.
It's Tommy. Dick springs to his feet.
Hello.
Hello, Nugent.
Come on in.
Dick grins.
Last time I saw you, you were underwater. You all right and didn't get hurt or anything?
I keep myself in excellent physical condition at all times. How do you feel?
Splendid.
Tommy picks up the trophy and stares at it.
Well, to the victors belong the spoils.
Yeah, but you made a good race of it, Chamberlain. I don't think I like it there.
Nugent, the reason I'm here is that I want to let you off the hook.
Dick hands him a statue and puts the trophy in its place.
Oh, I know that taking Susan out was a nuisance to you, and it wasn't particularly good for Susan. It was especially a strain on Margaret.
Dick puts the statue back.
What are you most concerned about?
If I had to indicate my preference, I'd choose Margaret.
Who's your tailor?
Well, the coach was kind enough to furnish them to me.
Oh, I had it there, didn't I? But
now Dick tries the trophy on the coffee table.
I have something very important to tell you.
Uh-huh.
I've decided to drop the charges against you.
Yeah, just a minute. Let me see this.
I say I've decided to drop the charges against you.
Oh, drop my medal. Drop my medal. Help me look for it.
Yes, yes.
They crawl on the floor.
We can forget the whole thing. You won't have to come around anymore.
Hey, you look silly in that coat. Doesn't go with the rest of the clothes, you know that?
Let's stick to the subject. You're a free man now, Nugent. You're free. It's very possible that you and I won't be seeing any more of each other.
Found it. What'd you say?
I say it's very possible that you and I won't be seeing any more of each other.
They stand up.
Oh, well, Chamberlain, you've put me in a position where I'm forced to make a confession.
About Margaret?
They sit.
No, about Susan. I'm madly in love with her.
You're what?
Well, I don't know how it happened or why it happened. Perhaps it was something she said or the way she looked or something she wore. All I know is that I'm happy when I'm near her, that I... Well, you're a man. You must have felt what I feel. It's love, love.
It's preposterous. The child's only 17.
Yes, but she'll be 18 soon. We'll wait for our chance at life. Spring and autumn.
Stop it, Nugent. You're complicating the entire issue. I forbid it.
This is something no court of law can stop. This is bigger than you, bigger than me.
You're just what I always thought you were. You're irresponsible.
L'amour, my friend, l'amour.
We'll see about l'amour, my friend, l'amour.
Tommy storms out. Now, in a fancy nightclub, a maitre d' shows Dick a bottle of wine.
Of course, Mr. Nugent, it's not the kind of wine we used to get before the war, but I think that you'd rather like it. Well, at any rate, it's the best we can get nowadays. Oh,
thank you, Alex. I just wanted to make sure.
Oh, a lady enters.
Is that the mademoiselle?
No.
Dick fingers a spoon.
Hey, that isn't...
I'm awfully sorry.
Alex hands a spoon to a waiter.
I'm awfully sorry, Mr. Nugent, but you know, the polish, the best we can get nowadays.
Another lady.
Perhaps that's mademoiselle. No.
See, I wish we had some blue flowers. I think she'd like blue flowers.
We can get blue flowers, Mr. Nugent, but it'll take a little time.
Well, I'll fix these.
Margaret enters. Alex taps Dick's arm.
Huh?
Margaret wears a fur coat over an elegant dark dress with long black gloves.
Alex, that's the best you can get any day.
Weaving gracefully between the tables, Dick glides to Margaret's side.
Oh,
Hello.
Hello. I didn't know. I should have checked. I'm sorry. No black tie.
It's all right. That's a beautiful suit. And you look wonderful in it.
Dick smiles, takes her hand, and leads her through the dining room to a table near the dance floor. Alex bows and seats Margaret. Dick smiles at her across the table. Alex removes her coat. Her low-cut dress is suspended by one narrow, glittering shoulder strap. She eyes the flowers.
They're lovely, thank you. Yellow's my favorite color.
I thought so.
Happy birthday to you.
A waiter crosses the dance floor carrying a birthday cake with a single candle. Dick studies Margaret's smile.
Now, isn't that sweet?
I can't tell you how glad I am that you, that we're here.
Well, our relationship has been such an odd one, I thought it might be fun for both of us to try a new background.
Would you like to give your order now?
Later.
How about a drink in the meantime? Champagne?
Yes.
The time is now, Alex. Shall we dance?
Love to.
As Alex loosens the cork, Dick steps around the table to Margaret's open arms. They join the couples swaying on the dance floor.
Now, my father was a bachelor.
Really?
Wait, wait until I finish. Oh, he was a bachelor until way into his 30s. He always said he'd know who he was going to marry the moment he met her. He met my mother. Put his arm around her, and that was it. Just the way she felt in his arms did the trick. They were married 3 days later.
It's a very romantic story.
Well, they were happy all their lives. Apparently had nothing in common. I told you, she was a piano teacher, and he was a flag decorator.
A what?
Flag decorator. Oh, he was a good one, too, until he fell off the Newark City Hall, broke his leg.
Your family sounds like fun.
He meets her gaze.
You must have come from a nice family. Shows in your face.
Well, my family weren't quite that impulsive. My father courted my mother through high school, college, and law school. 14 years after they met, they decided it was time to get married. They had a lot in common. They were both attorneys.
Margaret presses close and gazes over his shoulder.
You feel nice in my arms.
As Dick watches her, Margaret averts her gaze.
I imagine that if mother and father hadn't had so much in common, they needn't have waited 14 years. It could have happened suddenly. Romantic.
Nearby on the dance floor, Agnes and the bald man from the court bounce along to the music.
Vicky!
Dick turns and then winces as Agnes drags her partner over.
Oh, hello, Agnes.
You didn't congratulate me, Dickie.
Should I?
It's my birthday.
Congratulations.
Nugent, what do you say we let bygones be bygones, huh?
They shake hands.
Hey, don't I know you?
Yes, we've met.
Where'd I meet you? Was it Dickie's apartment?
No, you remember Judge Turner.
Oh,
Judge...
well, of course. Well, yes. Well, you got to be friends, huh? Leave it to Dickie. He knows all the angles.
If it's getting too crowded, we can go back to the table.
It's too crowded.
Happy birthday.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, now there's a guy who never goes out of a girl's mind. He just stays there, like a heavy meal.
What am I like?
Orange juice.
At Dick and Margaret's table.
I'm terribly sorry about that.
It's nothing. I'm sure you didn't know she was going to be here.
Are you sure you're sure that I didn't know she was going to be here?
Yes, why?
Well, I was just wondering.
I've given up jumping
a cigarette girl.
Good.
Hello, Dickie.
Hello, Jolly.
Cigarettes?
No, thanks.
All righty.
Cute kid. I did a magazine cover of her.
No, she's nice.
Susan rushes in.
This is absolutely forbidden.
Susan, oh. I do not intend to create a scene. What are you doing?
But you both ought to be ashamed of yourselves.
Another chair.
I'm too young to be deceived by such treachery.
What would you have to drink?
Lemonade.
Sit down, Susan.
I don't intend to stay.
Thank you.
And some chocolate ice cream.
Yes,
I suppose you wonder how I found out where you were.
What's going on in your mind?
You know perfectly well what's going on. You told me that Dickie was sick, exhausted from the picnic. So after you left, I got dressed and I went to Dickie's apartment and they told me where he was. And here I am. And here you are.
I demand an explanation from both of you.
Susan, aren't you being
Dickie,
a little child?
I can be anything I want to
Joey
be.
Joey wants to buy you and Judge Turner a birthday drink on him.
Well, at the moment, it's...
I owe it to you and to Judge Turner for being so nice to us.
We'll only be with you a few minutes. This time I'll have to drink one down.
Oh, Garkin! This party's on me. Bring 2 chairs.
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't believe we've been acquainted.
Susan Turner,
Agnes and Joey are good enough. Is this your daughter, Judge?
No, it's her sister. It's her older sister. I mean, Margaret's sister.
You got plenty of room, sweet Judge?
Sure, now.
You're looking up alike, be mother and daughter.
Sisters look alike, too.
I hate my sister.
Happy birthday to you.
They all turn as a waiter passes carrying a cake.
Happy birthday, Mr. Rosenheimer. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, I just love birthdays. I think birthdays are the best.
Maybe we can get Mr. Rosenheimer to come over here.
No matter what you say, I intend to wait here.
Nobody said anything to you.
It's a cute hat you got on.
And I don't intend to take it off.
I didn't ask you to take it off. Oh, fine. Bring another round of the same. Put it on my check.
Joey points to his plate.
Very good, sir. You can take these away, and we're not going to eat anything. Just drinks. Oh,
yeah. Jerry arrives.
Oh, hello, Jerry. Glad to see you.
Doubt if anyone's glad to see me.
You weren't invited, Mr. White.
Jerry, I'd like you to meet Agnes and
hello.
Joey.
I just love kids with that floppy hair. It's so casual looking.
I suppose you're wondering how I got here.
Well, she isn't, I am.
It's going to be quite a party.
All is not gold that glitters.
Oh, brother, you said a mouthful. I remember one time
just
in this
a
store,
minute.
They brought out this big bowl.
Just a minute. I haven't got much time left. I went to see you, Susan, because I got word I'm being drafted.
She looks at him, then resumes eating.
I went to the house, and you were gone, and then I went to Mr. Nugent's apartment, and they told me that...
Yes, we know the rest of it, Jerry.
Well, I just wanted to say goodbye, that's all.
Well, you don't have to make such a big thing about it, Jerry. After all, the war is over.
I know, but guns go off accidents sometimes, or a fella could trip on a bayonet.
I know how you feel, going away, perhaps not seeing your loved ones for a couple of years.
You're a fine boy, Jerry, and a good friend. Possibly Mr. Nugent doesn't know just how good.
You don't have to tell me anything about Jerry.
Maybe I could tell you a few things about Jerry. How loyal he is, and how he made sure that you won that race this afternoon.
What kind of a race? Where were you this afternoon?
This doesn't really concern you.
What are you talking about?
You shouldn't have said that, Susan.
A woman scorned is a fury.
What are you drinking, Bob?
I'll have an eggnog.
Just a second. Jerry, what did you...
Harkon,
please. Bring the boy an eggnog.
Isn't that amazing?
Jerry, what did you have to do with my...
Two eggs.
What did you have to do with my...
The waiter places a birthday cake in front of Agnes. She grins excitedly and kisses Joey's cheek.
Jerry, did you frame it so that I could win that race?
Well...
He only did it because he knew how much I loved you. Susan, I forbid this kind of talk.
Well, life's very complicated.
Too complicated.
Good evening. Sit down. You're just in time for a piece of cake.
Thank you, I will.
Tommy grabs a chair from the next table.
I went to your house.
Let me tell you, you went to Margaret's house. You found she'd gone. You were suspicious she was gone out with me, so you went to my apartment.
You'd make a good detective, Nugent.
Who is this guy? I don't like you.
Neither do I. The name is Chamberlain.
Hello.
Hello.
How do you do?
Get him. How do you do?
Of course you know what you're doing.
Of course I know what I'm doing.
It might interest you to know that this man...
Do you know what you are? You're a regular Blackbeard.
Bluebeard, dear.
Well, a rose by any color.
No, everybody's too excited.
Nobody's excited. Margaret, I want you to know that only this afternoon this man told me he's madly in love and only in love with Susan.
Oh, Dickie, did you, darling?
Well, I did, yes, but I was only kidding.
Well, I don't like your kidding Susan for any reason.
Now, Jerry, you stay out of this.
Everybody's so unhappy. Why don't we all have a drink or a piece of cake?
I don't feel like eating.
A portly bald man approaches and stands behind Tommy.
It's a public place to continue this discussion.
Mister, you have my chair.
There are other chairs here.
Dickie, I realize that fact, and I suggest that you occupy one.
Do you love
one.
Me or don't you?
In the meantime, I want my chair.
Susan, you're a very cute child, but I can't honestly say that I love you.
I'm busy too, but I still want my chair.
After she spent $4.50 to make sure you won that race.
Well, that's too bad. You can have the cup back.
You mean that victory of Nugent's was a frame-up?
For the last time, I want my chair.
A waiter brings a cake to the woman with the portly bald man. She kisses him and returns to the next table. The portly man glares at Tommy.
Happy anniversary!
I don't want any trouble with you. I just want my chair back.
Oh, stand up.
Tommy stands.
Please, sit down.
Tommy crashes to the floor. The portly man sits at his table in his own chair.
You're always saying the wrong thing.
Shall we fight this out?
Now, we're too excited now. Let's calm down.
Right.
Sit.
As they sit, Susan stands.
I'm going to get out of here. So am I.
No, wait a minute.
Sorry.
I've had enough of this, and I've had enough of you. Everywhere you go, you attract trouble.
Let's go jumping again.
Shut up! Thank you for a lovely evening.
Margaret leaves.
Thank you. Tommy faces the portly man.
If I was so disposed, I could make a lot of trouble for you, my friend. You may be a regular guy, but I don't know.
Jerry leaves.
I hope this fixes your kettle of fish.
I came over here simply to buy you a birthday drink, and you ruined my birthday. You ruined it. Joey went to all the trouble to get me a birthday cake, and you ruined everything. Come on, Joey, you let him pay for the drink.
I'd punch you right in the nose if I wasn't afraid you'd break my jaw.
As Joey grabs the cake, he knocks a glass of champagne on Dick.
Oh, I am awfully sorry, Mr. Nugent.
As Alex reaches to clean Dick's suit, Dick slaps his hand.
Would there be anything else?
Dick glares at the maitre d'.
For instance...
Now at the Turner house, Matt and Thaddeus face each other over a game of chess.
Well, it's your move. Been your move for 7 minutes.
I'm just a little concerned about Margaret and Susan.
Well, they're old enough to take care of themselves, and you just made a stupid move.
Thaddeus takes his turn and captures one of Matt's pieces. Susan storms in. Thaddeus jumps.
Susan?
Susan runs up the stairs.
Susan!
Glancing back with a pouch, she trots onto her room. Thaddeus jumps.
Why does she do that?
Maybe I should find out what's wrong.
Your queen's in danger.
Oh. Matt turns toward the front door. Margaret dashes upstairs.
Margaret!
You and your psychology!
She stomps to her room. Downstairs, Thaddeus's hand hovers over the board. Thaddeus jumps.
I will not stand for this excitement. Your queen's still in danger.
Oh.
Matt studies the board. It's Tommy.
What's happened? What's wrong?
There's a great deal wrong. I insist on talking to Margaret.
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible unless you break her door down.
This is a conspiracy.
Tommy storms out the front door. Thaddeus jumps. Matt returns to the parlor.
You intend to finish this game, or don't you?
Now, Thaddeus!
Jerry bursts in.
I can't stand it. I've got to talk to Susan.
It's too late to talk to anybody, Jerry. Come back in the morning.
This is a fine way to treat a veteran.
He strides back out. Thaddeus jumps, then knocks the chessmen off the board.
Thaddeus! You're old enough to control yourself. Oh.
Thaddeus slaps the black queen off and marches out the back door. Margaret comes out.
Margaret, I want to talk to you.
You keep out of this.
She storms into Susan's room and finds her sister putting a dowel in a suitcase.
Well, if you're leaving home, you might take something more practical than a dowel.
Susan puts the dowel back on the shelf.
I hate you. Susan, you can't mean that.
I do. My own sister stealing the man I love.
Susan, you're not being fair.
The other woman.
It's not like that at all.
She dumps Susan's bag.
Why don't you send me to prison and get me out of the way?
Susan!
I'm old enough to fight for my own happiness. Anyway, I saw him first.
They turn. Matt enters.
I couldn't help overhearing. I had my ear to the door.
Uncle Matt, this is all your fault. You created this whole situation. You deliberately told Susan to come to that nightclub tonight.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Let's all calm down and be sensible. Susan, did I or did I not send you to find Margaret?
You certainly did not. It was all my own idea.
That's beside the point.
And I didn't send Tommy and I didn't send Jerry, and you're both hysterical.
If I want to be hysterical, why my hands?
Please, calm down. Margaret, will you please go to your room and let me talk to Susan?
I have nothing to say to anyone. I will not make a statement of any kind at this time.
Matt points to the door.
Unpack those clothes and hang them up.
Margaret leaves.
Susan, I'm still strong enough to take you over my knee and give you the spanking that I sincerely believe you deserve.
You wouldn't dare.
I have no intention, however, of spanking you if you'll be sensible. Now, sit down.
Susan looks away.
Sit down!
She sits.
I'm going to tell you why I think your infatuation for Mr. Nugent is a childish one, and why you've been cruel and unfair to Mr. Nugent and to Margaret and to Jerry, and why you're going to get sensible about the entire matter.
I am.
You are?
Susan drops her head.
And you're going to listen to me, and you're going to do just as I tell you.
Later, in Margaret's room, she brushes her hair.
Margaret.
Come in, dear.
Susan enters, holding her hands behind her and stretched toward her sister.
Margaret, I've just had a long talk with Uncle Matt.
Yes?
And I see things much more clearly. After all, Richard is too old for me. When I'm 42, he'll be 60. And anyway, Jerry's going to look awfully handsome in his uniform, don't you think?
I think.
So I've decided to renounce Richard for Jerry.
That's very sensible of you.
And now that you have a clear feel with Richard, I think you ought to patch things up. I've acted very childishly, and I'm sorry, really sorry.
Margaret puts her arm around Susan.
If I had a million sisters, I'd want them all to be exactly like you.
You're just saying that because I'm sklunklish.
Because you're smart.
Good night.
Good night.
Susan poses against the door.
You know, in many ways, I think this has made a bigger woman of me.
Margaret gives her a sideways glance. As Susan hurries out, Matt comes in and closes the door. Margaret walks over, glaring sternly.
I'm not interested in any more of your psychological mumbo-jumbo.
But, Margaret, you're being too cold about this. You must look at it from the emotional point of view.
I don't deal in emotions. I deal in facts. And the conclusions I draw from the facts are depressing.
Yes, well, depressing or not, you're in love with Richard Nugent.
Uncle Matt, I'm quite weary and I want to go to sleep. I'll discuss this with you in the morning.
She opens the door.
Good night.
Very well.
He starts to leave.
I thank you for one thing, straightening Susan out.
It's perfectly all right. Good night.
Good night.
As Matt walks away, Margaret gently closes the door and leans her forehead against it. Now a TWA airplane ticket envelope lies on a table. A man opens the envelope and slides out a ticket from Chicago to Los Angeles. Matt puts down the ticket and turns. Dick enters.
Hi.
He carries a suitcase.
How did you get in here?
Well, the door was closed, so I opened it and came right in.
Well, you can open it again. Go right out.
But you and Margaret are having trouble.
None of your business.
Well, in a way it is. Don't forget that I started this whole thing.
I won't.
Where are you going?
Africa.
Pretty far away, isn't it?
All depends upon where you are. If you're in Arabia, which is where I'm going to be before I go to Africa, you're pretty close. Now, would you mind getting out of here? I've got things to do.
All right.
Dick packs the suitcase.
But you're making a mistake. You can't run away from yourself. The trouble with you is that you're in love with Margaret.
Don't be ridiculous.
Well, look at the facts. First,
facts. I'm an artist. I deal in emotions. If my emotions tell me to get out of here, what do your emotions tell you? Psst. Fine.
All right. But I've got a plan.
I've had enough of your plans and your whole family. I was a carefree fellow before I met up with all of you. I've been in nothing but trouble ever since. I'm going to be a carefree fellow again. Now, buzz off.
All right. Oh, but if you should run across Professor Smedley while you're in Johannesburg, give him my regards. He's a cousin of ours. Just a fifth cousin.
Now Matt drives Margaret in his car.
Ah, beautiful morning. Simply beautiful. Isn't it?
Yes.
Wonderful weather for flying. Isn't it?
Yes.
The thing is, Margaret, it'll give you a chance to relax for a few days.
Uncle Matt, I think you'd better take me home.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
I think it's ridiculous that I'm packing up for 3 or 4 days, running away, all because of a very silly man.
Oh, well, darling, let bygones be bygones, and if by chance your path should ever happen to cross, well, that's another thing.
They better not cross.
For the time being, you just do what Uncle Matt tells you.
The last few weeks, you haven't been doing so good.
Well, all I did this morning was to talk you into taking a little plane trip.
You could talk the devil into going to church.
Oh!
Now Matt's car passes grounded planes at a hangar, then pulls up alongside the front curb at Municipal Airport. They park, and a valet in a jumpsuit opens Matt's door.
Keys, please. Be right with you.
Matt joins a porter at the trunk.
Go ahead, dear. I'll take care of the baggage and the tickets.
Baggage?
Now inside the airport, Matt goes to the TWA ticket counter.
I'm sorry we couldn't accommodate you, but I'm sure we can get you on the next flight.
All right, thanks anyway.
Judge Turner's reservation, please.
All right, sir.
Oh, thank you very much, and please thank Mr. Martin for arranging this. It was an emergency. I do appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Matt turns and Tommy walks in.
Beamish, where's Margaret?
Why, I don't know. I'm looking for her now.
You know she's leaving?
Oh, yes, yes.
I thought so. It's all Nugent's fault. Everything was all right till he came along. If I see him again, he'd get 10 years. I got a bench warrant out for his arrest.
Now, if you'll take my advice...
I don't want your advice. I should have locked him up in the first place. Now, where's Margaret?
Well, I don't know. She should be here. Why don't you watch that entrance, and I'll keep my eyes open here.
Very well. Let me know the instant she arrives.
Sure, sure.
Matt watches Tommy march off. Outside, a man parks Dick's convertible at the curb. Dick gets out of the passenger door carrying his coat.
So long, Jebby. Thanks. Have fun. Stay out of jail.
Inside, Matt hands Margaret the ticket.
Well, here you are, darling.
Maybe I ought to have some second thoughts about this trip.
Oh, now, don't start that all over again. You just go away and have a good time. I'm sorry I can't wait to see you off, but I have to get back to the office.
Thanks, Uncle Matt. I don't know what for, but thanks.
You're welcome. Happy landing.
Bye.
At the terminal entrance, Matt sees Dick come in. Nearby, a cop with folded arms watches the crowd. Matt sees him, then pulls out his wallet.
Officer, I'm Dr. Matthew Beamish. I'm the city psychiatrist.
Well, Doctor, I'm glad to know you.
I'm observing a patient of mine. I might need your help.
Who is he?
That blonde fellow with the brown suit, the brown hat.
Oh, yeah.
He's really quite harmless, but he might create a scene.
What seems to be his trouble?
He thinks that he's the assistant district attorney. He likes to go around arresting people.
Oh, poor guy. You'd think he'd at least want to be a desk sergeant, wouldn't you?
Well, I'll try to handle it, but I just wanted you to know in case.
I'll be around.
The cop nods. Tommy comes up to Matt.
Have you seen Margaret?
No, I haven't seen her yet.
Say, I want to tell you a story.
I don't want to hear any story.
Dick walks by. Tommy sees him.
There's Nugent. Let's get him.
Wait a minute. You're making a mistake.
Oh, no, I'm not.
You're sure that you want to go through with this?
Positive. It'll give me a great deal of pleasure to put him where he belongs. Officer!
The cop comes over.
I want you to arrest someone.
No, you don't want to go around arresting nice people.
What?
Why don't you be a good boy and go on home?
You know who you're talking to. I'm the assistant district attorney.
Sure you are.
Tell him who I am.
Yes, he is the assistant district attorney.
Well, now, ain't that nice?
You stupid blockhead. I'll do it myself.
Wait a moment. You don't want to bother anybody.
Having trouble, Tom?
I'm the assistant district attorney.
Sure he is. Now, just take it easy. Relax. We'll make you district attorney, then you'll be in charge of all the little assistant district attorneys.
I'll report you to the police commissioner. Beamish, get their number.
Yeah, I'll get a pencil. Be right back.
Come on.
The cops drag Tommy away.
Wait a minute. Where are you taking me? Leave me alone.
Outside the doors to the landing strip, Margaret stops, opens her purse, and takes out her ticket. Passing her, Dick checks his watch. As Dick takes his ticket from his pocket, Margaret steps in front of him at the line to the boarding gate.
Margaret Turner.
Nugent, Richard.
Thank you, sir.
Margaret faces Dick. They both turn toward the terminal where Matt waves to them, grinning. As passengers board the plane, a smile creeps across Dick's face. Margaret eyes him warily.
You remind me of a man.
What man?
A man with a power.
What power?
Power of hoodoo.
Hoodoo?
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of a man.
What man?
Man with the power.
What power?
Give up?
He nods.
Give up. Let's go.
He takes her arm and they smile at each other. Joining the other passengers, they run to the airplane ramp. Words appear. The end. A logo. RKO Radio Pictures. Credits appear. Cary Grant as Dick. Myrna Loy as Margaret. Shirley Temple as Susan. Rudy Valley as Tommy. Ray Collins as Beamish. Harry Davenport as Thaddeus. John Sands as Jerry. Don Bedeau as Joey. Lillian Randolph as Bessie. Vita Ann Borg as Agnes Prescott. Dan Tobin as Walters. Ransom Sherman as Judge Treadwell. William Bakewell as Winters. Irving Bacon as Melvin. Ian Bernard as Perry. Carol Hughes as Florence. William Hall as Anthony Herman. Gregory Gay as Maitre d' Hotel. Fade to black.